Welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on the weekly, the Drive-Thru RPG website redesign, new Alien RPG module released, Acheron RPG coming to Kickstarter, Ultraviolet Grasslands free player's guide, and Icewind Dale, Rime of the Frost Maiden. So I was looking around the internet and I
were you? Is that what it's for? Okay.
And I found the little link at the top of Drive-Thru RPG that said preview our new design. I mean, it's a long time coming. I mean, this will bring them into the 21st century, hopefully, this look, because yeah, that's a pretty dated thing they had going on.
It's functional for the most part.
The one thing that I wish they would redesign that's probably not gonna happen is their back end. It's horrifying.
It's really
bad to use.
Someone who has a couple titles up on DriveThruRPG and is recently trying to use DriveThru cards.
Oh, yeah.
It's not really that intuitive.
Yeah. But anyhow, this redesign, I mean, it looks like they're going to use it to kind of forward some things that they want to promote. It's okay. I mean, okay.
It does what it needs to do.
Yeah. And it looks more modern. Like they're cleaning things up. It doesn't have that, things are less dated feeling.
It doesn't autoplay like a MIDI file when you open it up.
No. And hopefully they get it working better for mobile and tablets and things, because the version now is not great for that either. It doesn't work very well.
Yeah, even on my phone, I usually switch it over to desktop mode to have increased functionality. Yeah.
Yeah, that's weird that they just kind of limit functionality and there's things that you definitely need to do.
Well, I'm sure people are just going to DM's Guild because that's the only thing that matters, right?
Right. That's right. As long as that works. So they're going to have categories and you're going to be clicking on publishers a lot more, and they're going to sort things because they have a variety of things that aren't just rule sets or aren't just settings or scenarios or things. So there's, you know, STL files for 3D printing. Even like paper model files and things. So there's a lot of things that would be better to sort into categories, and so you can only look at certain categories or publishers that you're looking for.
Yeah, there's also a lot of publishing resources. As someone who tries to like make their own, I don't try to, I actually do make their own TTRPGs, they're just not that successful. I've looked in there for things like Stock Art, InDesign, or Affinity Publisher templates. They have a wide variety and pretty decent selection of like elements along those lines, but you kind of have to dig for them.
Right. And the one thing I noticed, and I wonder if they're going to push this a little further, is they're always promoting that Astral virtual tabletop.
Yes, which I have never looked at.
No, I haven't either, but I think it's going to become inevitable as they try to promote like things that are working well with that. That's going to be in your face every time you visit. So we'll have to see how well that's integrated. But they partnered with them, so that's going to be their virtual tabletop of choice. So it's like, it looks like search and finding what you want might be a little bit better.
Okay.
You get some really bad lists. Like sometimes if a link will take me there, but then I want to look something else up, the results I get are just nonsense sometimes. Yeah. So hopefully that's going to be implemented a little bit better. And if it's easier to sort, then you won't be searching. Like you're saying, if I'm searching for a few keywords and I'm getting, you know, resources and things that have nothing to do with actual rule set, really a mess. Yeah. So I hope it goes a little bit better, because right now, I mean, they've got such a huge network of sites and none of them are very, I mean, they all are exactly the same.
It's just
with a logo and a shade.
I do think it's a little weird, hue. Just kind of collapse it all into one now. Yeah.
Yeah, and make it very searchable. That would be great. We'll see. And I hope it doesn't have that board game geek problem, though, of they updated it. So you can, if you do search and you hit a Board Game Geek result, sometimes you're taken to this really beautiful new redesigned site. And then sometimes you're taken to the old funky version, depending on like what part of the site you're accessing. And so it's not a full redesign. Like it doesn't go through it. And I think maybe like the forums and like, you know, account management and stuff is still old style.
Well, who wants to update all those forum posts?
Just recently, the retail release of the Alien cinematic adventure, Destroyer of Worlds, and you pre-ordered.
Just before coming over, it looks like people who pre-ordered it have started getting physical copies.
Oh, good.
And there was an email I got from Free League and saying, if you pre-ordered it, your things are currently being shipped around the same time that the public retail release is going on.
Right.
And to save on shipping, it's one of the things I sent to my folks' place in the States. So I'm looking at these like beautiful boxes, kind of going, wow. Thanks to everything. Who knows when it's actually going to be in my hands. Mm. But the box, I've only seen the exterior of the boxes. They look really nice. But I think I said before, I've read through at least the Destroyer of Worlds adventures, kind of skimmed it, and hopefully we'll run it sometime.
Oh, cool. Yeah, and I was surprised it's a box set because they're releasing both the starter set and then this cinematic adventure, and it was a box set. So it's got a double-sided map, 5 pre-gen characters, custom weapons, vehicles, variants, personal agenda cards, and relevant handouts. That looked pretty good. So what was your, have you read through a little bit?
I've skimmed the Destroyer of Worlds Adventures, and I got the bundle, which was both boxed sets, both the new starter set and the Destroyer of Worlds cinematic set, because if you buy them together, there was kind of I forget how much of a discount, but it was a slight discount. And even though I'm not that interested in the Colonial Marines aspect of the Aliens franchise, I am interested in seeing more examples of cinematic starters or cinematic scenarios, because I think that's the strength of the game. The adventure or the scenario is what you would expect based on kind of Chariot of the Gods, you know, kind of similar, not similar in terms of content, but sort of same structure where you have these pre-generated characters. There's different acts where you get
agenda, personal
the personal agendas that are going to kind of change and develop so that you actually kind of play it like a movie.
Right.
The one difference from Chariot of the Gods, there's 3 acts. It's not chronological. And what I mean is, like, in Chariot of the Gods, okay, I guess slight spoilers, Act 1, Act 2, and Act 3 were kind of, like, based on how much time the PCs spent on the Kronos. The Destroyer of Worlds scenario, you're set on a base, I think planet-side, actually, and it's time-based, but the players or the characters can go anywhere. So if there's, like, a bunch of different locations, and they've had to, in the book, say, if you're in Act 1, here's what's going on. If you're in Act 2, here's what's going on. And if you're in Act 3, here's what's going on, all for the same location, because there's no set order. The players have to go to any location in, which is interesting and exciting and what I would kind of expect from a scenario. It also means there's a lot of information crammed into each location, which the GM is either going to, Game Mother, is either going to have to memorize or have readily accessible to run the game.
I'm interested in that as well, like how that's going to run, especially because you're doing a lot more combat. Like I think with the previous cinematic adventure, you could do a lot more fleeing if you wanted to just kind of.
I think you were encouraged.
Yeah,
of course, it wasn't really. Well, depending on where you went,
It looks like a nice package, and I'm glad that they're including a lot of the extras in it, not just like a paperback book or whatever. And that helps a lot when you've got the character portrait and you've got a card, kind of secret information to read about your motivations. I think that's a nice...
I was not skeptical. I'm always, I guess, a little skeptical of like add-ons, things like cards and, you know, dice and tokens and stuff like that. But when we played Alien the first time, I really saw how having these the personal agendas as cards, or being able to pass out the equipment cards, was both helpful, like a helpful way to quickly convey information to the players. And also, when we played Chariot of the Gods, the captain being able to hand out the equipment and seeing who got what and who didn't get anything, I think enhanced the experience of the game, where you were really aware of, you know, kind of who got what. And so I made cards when I ran it, which is why I actually went for the box set and saying, okay, I'm normally not that impressed by this stuff. I think it really does enhance the gameplay. So yeah, let's bring for the box set.
Oh, that's cool. And like you said, also they released the starter set. And I really like the fact that they gave a disclaimer that said, if you supported this game already in an initial bundle, there's nothing new here. Like the starter set contains, you know, everything that was included in their kind of early pre-release, like the condensed rules and the cinematic adventure that you got from the beginning. So that's going to be Chariots of the Gods, adventure in the starter set. So the first cinematic adventure that we all played. It also gives you the 84 game markers to keep track of motion tracker pings, characters, and alien locations, then 56 custom weapon cards, and then also 20 custom dice. So they give you a bunch of dice in there too. But that also comes at a price then. So the retail for the starter set is $49.99, whereas Destroyer of Worlds was $29.99. Yeah, I guess those dice bump things up a bit.
Yeah, I think the together the price was something like $80.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
If you went for like the bundle. I don't know if that's still available.
Right. But I'll put a link to the Free League website and also DriveThruRPG, because you can get the digital version of everything if you want to print yourself. And if there's things that you don't think you're going to.
You'd be printing a lot if you had the PDF.
And a word of warning, it's not a very print-friendly game, because everything is black, you know, green on black.
Yeah, it looks great. if you're printing it yourself, which I printed out when we were running Chariot of the Gods, printed out chunks of that condensed rule book, it's a lot.
Yes. Yeah, but it's a good game. We had a lot of fun with those. And those cinematic adventures are good for a single session or a few sessions, depending on how much time you have.
I think you would be really hard-pressed to run Destroyer of Worlds in a single session. Unless you were doing like a marathon 8-hour thing.
Really?
Just because it looks more substantial, though not excessively so, than Chariot of the Gods. Like, there's more to it than Chariot of the Gods, I would say.
Is there any kind of like ticking clock or anything that kind of pushes the characters time-wise? Like, is there anything that's going to explode or any critical events?
Actually, and saying what I think would be spoilers, but you're playing Colonial Marines and you have a time frame within which to complete your mission.
I see. Okay.
So there's kind of like, I guess, like an internal pressure of kind of just command says do it by this time. Mm-hmm. There's also a couple things going on in the location that will come to a head. So.
Right. So I hope we get a chance to play that. I think that would be fun because the original one, Chariot of the Gods, was fun.
And we have a lot more rules knowledge now.
Yes.
Thinking about like that Chariot of the Game Gods, which was fun. There were a lot of deaths where there should have been some empathy rolls where you're not emptying the air out of the science lab unless you fail that empathy roll.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Something that I saw on Kickstarter, the Acheron RPG is coming to Kickstarter. So they've already released kind of a beta version, free beta version of these rules. Seems like an interesting world and an interesting system. They're calling themselves like a mature RPG, not meaning
nobody saw my grimace at that. So okay, let's hear it.
Not meaning like sex and violence. I'm meaning like, you know, mature themes of
sex and violence.
Of madness and so they say it's, you know, Call of Cthulhu inspired World of Darkness, and it's about sacrificing your humanity to fight horrors in the world.
Okay.
So the setting of the world is surrounded by a massive wall. Mm-hmm. So it's impenetrable until a breach comes. And through this breach comes all sorts of...
tentacle monsters.
Yes. Okay. Yes. The Reclamation Act is passed and kind of new social order rises around this. So the factions are kind of interesting. There's a government faction, a Church of the Twin Gods faction, and then basically a lot of families that had been, you know, heads of industry and things are the factions that you can choose to play. And so they all have...
What faction are you? The Rockefeller faction. Yeah, all right.
It did seem to have some real interesting clash between the different factions of the game. A mature RPG, Dark World Studios uses a simplified realism, to inform all parts of the Acheron RPG. One result is a deadly and grim combat system, and another is a tense world of kind of clashing cultures.
Okay.
It's a deadly game, so characters start with around 6 health, and a single pistol shot does 1d10, so you gotta take cover and wear armor if you need to. Something that they have included in the system is to keep characters alive. The diehard system allows players to give their character a permanent flaw rather than suffer character death. So that's kind of a... yeah, that's a newer thinking. Let your character die and join in with another is, I think, maybe a little bit of a better...
It can be. I was thinking, okay, like Fate. It can be really hard to kill characters in Fate, but you can kind of do that in Fate as well. There's a way to not die, shrug off like a massive amount of damage, but you have to completely rewrite your high concept to then incorporate whatever kind of new flaw or new quality your character has. And this looks like an extreme way to do it.
Yeah, and they also talk, sanity. They have a sanity mechanic.
That's what I'm waiting for.
There's three significant categories of trauma: mortal, violent, and supernatural. So characters can also recover and regain sanity through camaraderie with friends or treatment. So kind of social interaction. I guess that makes sense, the kind of group morale can kind of restore you. Yeah, so there are free beta rules to this, and it is currently on Kickstarter. So if you want to have a look at that, the artwork is gorgeous, and I think the setting is interesting. It looks different. It's not Call of Cthulhu, but the setting is kind of a 1930s look. The politics, there's much more politics and clash and between the factions that they're trying to go for instead of the individual against the unknown.
Right.
So maybe, you know, more like a zombie movie where the humans are, you know, in conflict and the zombies are this like setting that they're dealing with, this context of like danger.
I think Chris and I got into a big argument one time about whether, for Alien as well, about whether the enemy is actually the alien or the other people around you.
Right. Something else I found was a free player's guide to Ultraviolet Grasslands.
I think I've seen this as well.
It's an award-winning tabletop RPG by Luka Rajek, inspired by psychedelic heavy metal and the Dying Earth genre. The player's guide is a 70-page, it's pay what you want. Right. The listing for it is pay what you want, but the creator himself is calling it a free player's guide. So
I guess I can see that argument because you could, if you want, pay nothing. Yeah.
And so you can download that on itch.io and take a look at that system. So the heroes in Ultraviolet Grasslands will find themselves exploring the boundless and mythical savanna, which is littered with debris from time and space, while also encountering all sort of kick-ass music. It's a game that is intended to be run for months, an epic road movie across a weird world, and there are cats.
I'm mildly familiar with Ultraviolet Grasslands because it's kind of been on my radar for a while, mm-hmm. and yeah, it looks like it's not a hex crawl, but I guess the assumption is you're going to be traveling this caravan road mm-hmm. from sort of point A to point B, crossing what I guess is the Ultraviolet Grasslands, which allows you to encounter all these different things kind of as, you know, you get to the, I forget what the end destination is.
The full game is available on itch.io and DriveThruRPG, and right now fans can pre-order the print version from Exalted Funeral Press. So I'll put a link to all that good stuff so you can find that, find some appropriate music, and you'll be all set.
Yeah.
And finally, something that you've been talking about.
Yeah, far too much.
Right. Icewind Dale, Rime of the Frost Maiden. So what is this?
It's D&D's latest adventure module, which I believe is going to be publicly released on September 15th. So okay. Possibly after this gets
right.
released. But
right.
Anyway, so I, if you've been listening for a while, you know my feelings on D&D. It's not great. Doesn't deserve the title of World's Greatest Role-Playing Game. And I only saw this because of a Polygon article mm-hmm. written by Charlie Hall, and the headline is D&D's next adventure will test even the best dungeon masters. And I came across this just by scrolling through my Twitter feed, and someone had quote retweeted it with the hashtag I'm up to the challenge. And there were several replies also saying they were up to the challenge. And that piqued my interest because I think it is kind of a negative way mm-hmm. to advertise an adventure module.
Mm.
It kind of seemed to be playing on that, are you man enough, or only the best gamers are going to be able to do this thing, and kind of baiting people into playing it. And it just kind of seemed like not underhanded marketing, just something we don't need to do anymore.
Ah, I see.
So I read the Polygon article. The first two paragraphs, in my opinion, were not flattering.
Mm-hmm.
It said, even experienced dungeon masters will have a tough time keeping up.
Right.
And the author of the article said, Rime of the Frost Maiden, however, takes so many bizarre twists and turns that I had a hard time keeping up from page to page. Which, there's been some discussion, and mm-hmm. I've been involved in some discussion, about whether that's accurate, whether this is just kind of like a negative review, because the rest of the article reads very positively and says all these wonderful things that you can do, including, get this, Jeremy, a TTRPG with multiple endings. And multiple decision points!
No way!
I know, amazing, right?
I hope we get the good one.
Yeah, really. Well, unlike some previous Dungeons & Dragons adventure modules, getting the bad one isn't just a simple decision. So you actually have to work for it this time, which, yeah, I don't know. The way the article was presented, I'm not sure if it was kind of a review or like a pitch for the scenario, possibly both. It may be spinning what were negatives in the past into mm-hmm. positives, saying, okay, maybe people were complaining about the lack of multiple endings in previous adventure modules where mm-hmm. they were getting railroaded. Mm-hmm. And hey, look, this one has multiples.
Right.
But from my perspective, for someone who doesn't really have a high opinion of D&D in the first place, this read very negatively.
Mm.
Also, I am of the opinion that if you're going to take the title of world's most popular role-playing game, you should be releasing modules that encourage people to DM and help people DM as much as possible and present the information the DM's going to need in as clear and concise a way as possible to be useful during the game.
Right.
And reading something like, the plot was so complex, I had to read it multiple times, right. or I was getting lost doing it, doesn't sound encouraging to me. So again, whether that's a bad review, I don't know, but it just didn't make the adventure look all that positive. I'll also point out, this is the adventure that I guess a couple people I've seen are slamming for reducing the boss monster, the Frost Maiden, to those three forms of Mother, Maiden, Crone, and her final form is essentially, it's called like, it's this frozen construct that's just like a diamond called like the Womb of Winter, where we've discussed before, it's like, good job, you've reduced womanhood to a frozen uterus. Yeah. Right. Nice one, D&D. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. This is tough because I think they're maybe struggling to find, and you know, since we're talking about it, and since it's probably going to get attention for challenging,
right.
That's going to get noticed, you know.
It is, yeah.
they might be running into, even though they're obviously selling a lot of books, DMs are who is buying adventures. Mm-hmm. And if you like have one kind of stable DM in your group, and so there's one person out of like the six of you or whatever that's buying books. And so instead of going the angle, this will challenge players, your players will never beat this, this is the deadliest dungeon ever, they're trying to challenge the DM. Can you run this?
Right.
That's an odd angle to take. And I think anybody outside of the, you know, 5e world, it's like, what are you talking about? Mm. Why would you make a game like that? But maybe if that's your system that you go to, that's what your group has been playing for this whole time, that is a marketing angle that they're taking. Right. It is odd. And I think from the outside, people are like, what do you guys do at the table?
Yeah, like I agree. And I think maybe not a problem, but if you are a DM, right, and you're kind of like the sole DM for your group, mm-hmm. I understand, as someone who DMs or runs games, knowing the plot of an adventure for multiple sessions and multiple games can get boring. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, there's not going to be that much surprise. Well, okay, I'll contradict that. If you're running sort of a railroady game, there's not going to be that much surprise for you, the DM. And I understand that can get boring. So reading this article, it kind of seems like, oh, there's surprises even for the DM, which I see why that would be appealing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Kind of, do you want this product to be usable at the table, or do you want DMs to read it? And enjoy reading it, right? Because I don't know. Actually, I'll take it back. An example where I think you can do that is something like Lucian Kahn's Visigoths versus Morgoths, which I just got my physical copy of. Mm-hmm. Like, part of the reason I bought the physical copy is the writing is hilarious, and like the NPCs and locations are hilarious. So I think that is an example of a game that is both entertaining to read, but also presented in a way that the information is kind of clearly accessible for the DM to run the game. I think it's more of the latter rather than the former, where if you focus more on entertainment, I would argue that the presentation and accessibility would probably suffer.
It's an odd thing too, because I guess that's a style. I mean, that's a style of tabletop that people are doing now, just buying pre-written adventures, having someone competent that wants to lead them through whatever. Let's buy the new one and let's run the new one.
Right.
Especially with 5e, I think our group just fell apart trying to get through a pre-written adventure. But the one that we world built, all gave input on and created our own world was what we stuck with. Like, you know, so I think that's a challenge I think they're always having, because they want to sell more books. And how many more subclasses and spells are you going to be able to come up with?
It's what's in the player stuff. Mm-hmm. All that player facing spells and subclasses and artifacts and stuff like this. And the DMs, it's adventure. Yeah. But I was going to say, this is going to sound possibly bad. I don't know how typical our group is,
right?
Where everyone in our group DMs. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone in our group is maybe more towards the improv side of things, where when we did try and play a pre-written adventure module, not through necessarily any fault of our own or not by trying to derail things, we just immediately said, okay, here's what we want to do.
Right.
And it was not follow the plot. Right?
Right, right.
So I don't know if our group could do a pre-written adventure module. Maybe there's other groups where they kind of want to be taken along for the ride.
Right.
And there was a Forbidden Lands game that I only played one session of with some new players who had some experience. And I remember at one point, one of the players said, you know, to the rest of the group, is this what we should be doing? Because I kind of want to get on with the story.
Oh.
And he didn't say it in a negative way, just kind of his experience was, there's a quest and you kind of do it. And even the GM kind of looked around and said, the story is what you end up doing.
Right, right.
So that kind of, again, illustrated to me how there are some players who just kind of want to be sit down and play out, which there's nothing wrong with. And I guess pre-written adventure modules, especially D&D, are for those groups.
Right. Yeah, there are people that's like, oh, let's see what surprises are in this quest. And especially Forbidden Lands, with its kind of hex crawling and random encounters, you can not get anywhere very easily. You know, you can survival mechanics and stuff can kick in, you start starving. And
It's
like, you can not follow that main quest very, very easily. So yeah, I definitely think two kinds of tastes. Because it's a fun surprise to see what happens, what the dice are making happen, what player choice is making happen in a more sandbox situation. But some people, where's the bad guy? Yeah. We want to get to the confrontation with they want the story to unfold.
I would argue, again, not having read this module, and I actually considered asking for donations to pick it up so I could read it, so I could kind of bash it. But then I said, no, WotC doesn't need my money.
Right.
The way it's laid out and the way it's presented, I wonder if it lends itself to that kind of improv sandbox decision. Because some games kind of, I think, allow you to do that by being sort of more rules light and not having to prep so much for an encounter.
Right.
And some, I think, lend themselves less to that by you having to prep a lot of work. So that if the players bypass something, you say, ah, all this prep I've done is now kind of out the window. And you might be inclined to nudge players and their characters back towards that encounter so you don't feel you've wasted your prep. Mm. But since we talked about it, I kind of want to compare a little bit the Icewind Dale, Rime of the Frost Maiden to those alien box sets.
Ah.
Because the retail price for Frost Maiden is about $50.
Mm-hmm.
For $175, you can get the Platinum Edition
from
Beetle and Grimm.
Of course.
Which, according to their website, has broken the module up into multiple books for, and I quote, more manageable, to be more manageable at the table.
Right, right.
And I saw that, and that was also a turnoff.
Yeah.
There was other stuff in the $175 package, or the sold-out $500 package, which to me is ridiculous. They sold 1,000 copies of that thing. And they didn't even, they were kind of being coy about it and didn't even give you a full list of what was in these boxed sets.
Wow.
I mean, they said, look at our other ones for examples of what's going to be in here. But whatever. I was really turned off by what looked like customers having to pay more to make the product more accessible. Mm. If they actually say, hey, breaking this up into multiple books is going to make it easier to run, why not have that for a much cheaper price?
Yes.
I understand producing a single book is a lot cheaper than producing multiple and a box set, but it really left a bad taste in my mouth to pay for better accessibility.
Right. So do you think we could get 26 episodes out of a critique of Icewind Dale, Rime of the Frost Maiden? So next year's Ennies, maybe for best podcasting, might be in our hands. If we can critique the overcomplexity and corruption that has infested Wizards of the Coast.
You know what? If someone wants to donate a copy of Icewind Dale, Rime of the Frost Maiden, I will review it.
Nice.
I will not buy it myself, but if someone wants to give me a copy, I will review it.
So visit patreon.com/idleright hands. But yeah, definitely. I think it's a little bit more of a bubble that we're not in. That people are seeing this as a good, and especially the kind of super deluxe versions of things that are being made. I don't know. I mean, it'll make a beautiful bookshelf.
It will. I'm sure the books they put out are beautiful. You get like dice in them. I think in the $500 set, you got like 20 pre-painted minis and all these kind of double-sided maps and all this stuff. Right, I'm not trying to say it's not worth the price you pay.
Mm.
However, the price you pay does seem rather steep to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It may include some of your dignity. So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always, where I'm currently reviewing Frank Herbert's Dune, chapter by chapter.
Oh, wow.
Not like a review. Yeah, rereading it again in anticipation of the movie coming
out. Right.
How about you?
And I do a single panel gag cartoon that I draw two of every week, and I live stream the creation of those cartoons. So you can find that on Twitch and YouTube under Abuse Cartoons. AbuseCartoons.com is the website. And if you want to look at the archive of all of those previous cartoons, it's gocomics.com/domesticabuse. And if you want to get in touch with Idle Red Hands, visit idleredhands.com. Follow us on Twitter at Idle Red Hands, and we have a Twitch and a YouTube channel. If you want to get involved, either consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/idleredhands or visit our website under Support Us. And if there's a copy of Icewind Dale, Rime of the Frost made it in there, Chris and I will go through that page by page.
I'm already kind of regretting putting that on there, but yeah.
It's only done. 320 pages.
It's done.
So I started looking at war game themed, you know, because war game is the origin of tabletop. All of the original people involved in creation of tabletop role play, you know, started in wargaming, historical wargaming. I found an excerpt from the H.G. Wells book, Little Wars. And I thought, because it was just an interesting combination, because he was inspired to kind of write down a system of rules that they were using to play on the floor with his kids. Him being a pacifist, I thought that this definitely came across. So a pacifist kind of creating the idea of casual wargaming at home. So not simulation, not military simulation or military exercises, not war games played out, but actually for entertainment war games. And so this is from H.G. Wells, Little Wars. So Little Wars was written in 1913. The full title of Little Wars is Little Wars, a game for boys from 12 years of age to 150, and for that more intelligent sort of girl who likes boys' games and books, provided simple rules for miniature wargaming. You have only to play at Little Wars 3 or 4 times to realize just what a blundering thing the Great War must be. Great War is at present, I am convinced, not only the most expensive game in the universe, but it is a game out of all proportion. Not only are the masses of men and materials and suffering and inconvenience too monstrously big for reason, but the available heads we have for it are too small. That, I think, is the most pacific realization conceivable, and Little War brings you to it as nothing else but Great War can do. So I like that. There's a detail in the introduction to this book that talked about during World War II, the police actually confiscated the tin soldiers, the lead soldiers that belonged to Wells' sons. That was the inspiration for him creating Little Wars. So that's a little sad, a sad note. And it was basically for his pacifist beliefs. That's it for this week. We'll be back next week.
Later, mortals.
Bye. The sounds of a call.